Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly conversation on New York State government and politics. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Casey Seiler, state editor and Capital Bureau chief for the Albany Times Union and one of the hosts of public television's New York Now, a statewide political program. Welcome back, Casey. Glad you found the time in this hectic series of appearances by everybody.
Alan, always a pleasure. I'm happy to be here.
Okay, so on April 19th, which is next week, there's going to be a primary in New York. New Yorkers are really used to not being paid attention to because of the primary schedule. Often New Hampshire determines it or Iowa. But now we're up to New York, and New York can be a make-or-break state. Is that right?
Yeah. This is really the first time since, on the Democratic side, 1992, when Bill Clinton was still trying to close the deal, and on the Republican side, going all the way back to 1976, that New York's delegates really mattered. Back in 1976, Gerald Ford, who of course was the sitting unelected president, had fallen behind in, or was expected to fall behind in, the delegate count. And while New York's delegates were officially sort of sitting on the fence at that point, the state party's GOP chair went to then Vice President Nelson Rockefeller, who of course had, you know, significant sway as the former four times elected governor, and said to him, you've got to tell the delegation to get off the fence. So even though back then the delegates were all kind of committed or would have been committed at a state convention, Rockefeller was able to go to them, jump on board, and the state party chair described it as Operation Rescue for Ford. Of course, today the state party chair is, is Nixon's son-in-law. In fact, Ed Cox, who I spoke to, and when asked if he longed for the days when a state party chair had that kind of sway, that kind of gravitas, he diplomatically refused to answer on the record. But what he did say is that this is the first time probably in New York state history that the Republican grassroots will really matter. Back in 1976, it was very much still the sort of pre-modern era for Republican primaries. It was only recently the modern era in Democratic primary politics. I mean, you, of course, remember 1968.
Of course, because I'm very old.
No, because you're a veteran watcher of politics. When Vice President Hubert Humphrey got the nomination, and correct me if I'm wrong, having not won any competitive primaries. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm getting a lot of mail, Casey, and you're one of the brightest guys in this area that I know. People really want to understand what this delegate stuff is all about. If somebody has if you vote for a candidate, the delegates are listed there. Do they have to do what you voted for, or can they do anything else?
The rules are wildly complex and are, of course, set by the National Party. There has been a lot of talk, especially from supporters of both the front runners and not the front runners, about the supposed fairness of the rules. But what's uncontested is that the rules have been set in the various states and at the national level for, I believe, more than a year now. And so anybody who's complaining now is sort of complaining about the refs, you know, at halftime, as it were.
Well, Donald Trump is saying that the system is rigged. I assume that means he thought he could go into the convention with enough delegates to take it.
He's still hoping that.
Yeah, but it turns out he may not be able to. So now he's yelling, it's rigged. Is it?
Well, if you mean, is it a system that has rules? Yes, it is. Is that system rigged so that the state parties and the national parties are able to exert some kind of sway or influence over the process? Yes, absolutely. I am unaware of any party that gives itself over entirely to the grassroots, certainly any party that is any kind of force on the national level. I guess you could go down to potentially the Green Party. But, you know, for example, the Working Families Party has a delegate system that gives the party leaders significant sway. That, in many ways, is why Zephyr Teachout did not get the Working Families Party's nomination when she ran against Governor Andrew Cuomo in 2014. But in terms of the Republican and Democratic parties, I have brought a cheat sheet that I hope will explain how these primaries work. Okay, so for both parties, the big races are in the congressional districts. New York has 27 congressional districts. On the Democratic side, depending upon the Democratic presence in your district, there are a kind of sliding scale of delegates that will be apportioned between 5 and 7 in most cases, or I think in all cases. There are 163 delegates statewide that are going to be pledged in this way, and they will be handed over to Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton in proportionality depending upon how each of those two candidates does on primary day. Now, there are about 100 more delegates who will be pledged at the state convention. That, of course, is coming up, I believe, about 6 weeks after the primary happens. On the GOP side, it's a little bit more complex. Each congressional district has 3 delegates who will be handed out. Anyone who gets more than 50% will get all 3 of those delegates. If that front runner or the winner gets under 50%, even if you get a plurality, the second place candidate will get 1 of those 3 delegates as long as that person, and I guess I can say he because they're all guys, clears 20%, okay? Statewide, the winner will get 14 additional delegates. So in other words, 81 delegates will be handed out from each of the, or from all collectively of the congressional districts, and then 14 in addition will be handed out to the winner of the state party.
So the Democrats have these things called superdelegates.
Yeah.
People who sit in office because McGovern and the McGovern campaign, it was a mess. And people like Senator Kennedy couldn't go, I believe, to the convention. So they said, okay, if you're an elected official, if you're an important official, you get to be a superdelegate. Now the Bernieites are yelling that the superdelegates are an inside job and that they are robbing their candidate because they are unfairly being given over to Hillary.
Right. And those superdelegates are members of the Democratic Party establishment. And the Sanders people have cried out for months and months, really pretty much ever since he got into the race, that Sanders is not the favorite of the party establishment. In New York, you can see that quite clearly in the large number of delegates who folks who go to the polls on Tuesday to vote in the Democratic contest will see as delegates on their ballot. In other words, if you're a Democrat and you go in to vote, you will be voting for your favorite candidate, Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton, and then you will also be voting for the slate of delegates that you want to go to the national convention on your behalf. And they will be identified as either a Sanders delegate or a Clinton delegate. And Clinton overwhelmingly has delegate candidates who are elected officials. State lawmakers, members of Congress are on that list. You know, party honchos, you name it. Bernie Sanders has a couple of elected officials, a goodly percentage of county, you know, legislators, city, you know, council leaders, those type of folks. But among elected officials, Clinton definitely has the support of more folks.
And isn't that what this election's all about? The idea that on both sides, the Republican side, and
insider,
the
outsider.
Yeah, insider, outsider. Bernie's an outsider, even though he's in the Senate. Trump is certainly an outsider. Casey, you're around. You're the guy who makes the political coverage decisions at the Times Union in large part. So I'm going to ask you this. Why do the Republicans hate Donald Trump so much, the Republican insiders?
Well, because he is an outsider, because they have seen the way he has conducted himself on the campaign trail, and they see him as someone who potentially could lead the party nationally to a catastrophe. That being the loosest of loose cannons, he could say something, not that he hasn't already said many, many things, that could hurt them potentially in tight Senate races where you might have a moderate who is trying to appeal to independent moderate voters who has to ally himself or herself. Kelly Ayotte, I hope I'm pronouncing that name right, is one of those people who is facing a very tough Senate race and might be hurt running down ballot from Donald Trump. Now, those politicians, those elected officials, those incumbents could also be hurt running alongside a Ted Cruz, who is also seen as, you know, a pretty far to the right conservative. I think he would probably proudly say that he is a far to the right
conservative. And has insulted New Yorkers, all New Yorkers, by saying he's not a fan of New York's spirit or whatever.
New York values. Yes, yeah. He basically castigated Trump as being emblematic of New York values, which he basically summed up as being liberal orthodoxy.
So Trump is, in all the polls, Trump is beating the hell out of everybody else.
Yeah, in New York, yeah.
Yes, in New York. Is that because he's a favorite son, because he's here, or is it because somehow he's excited people about, quote, he speaks his mind and all the rest?
I think it's all of the above. Yeah. I think that the fact that he is a favorite son, the fact that he is backed by members of the conservative grassroots, people like Carl Paladino, who, of course, won a stunning victory in the GOP primary in 2010 over a classic kind of Rubio, you know, Jeb Bush style establishment Republican in former Congressman Rick Lazio. He's been a supporter of Trump's forever. You know, he was backing Trump as a presidential candidate in 2012. He pushed very hard for Trump to run for governor against Cuomo in 2014. He introduced Trump at the Albany rally that we had at the Times Union Center on Monday night. When I say we, I mean the Capital Region and not the Times Union. And he is in many ways kind of a Buffalo's answer to Donald Trump.
Paladino, yes, exactly. Okay,
Casey,
so are you thinking that there's a possibility if he loses the presidency that he might run against Cuomo and run for governor, Trump?
Oh, I have not heard that floated. I have never heard that floated. In 2018?
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything to that effect. Trump, if you asked him that, would probably say, oh, I'm going for the presidency,
yeah, sure,
and that's it. And if Trump loses, who knows what that kind of, depending upon how well he
sure
does. I mean, we're wildly speculating here, but who knows what defeat would do to somebody like Donald Trump.
So let's segue on that. Andrew Cuomo, most people are now thinking he is going to run for another term, for a third term.
He has said
Yes. And therefore, do the Republicans have anybody who can defeat Andrew?
Oh, boy. We're talking 2 years out from the shank of the nominating process. Mm. You know, Chris Gibson has certainly put his name out there. Rob Astorino, the Westchester County executive, has said that he's very much interested in running again. I think that, you know, those are the
two
names.
Well, he got creamed the last time. Why would we think he could do any better this time?
Well, you would have to ask the county executive that question, but, you know, fail once, you know, try
sure
again isn't only an admonition that you tell your child. So, yeah, I would say those are the two people occupying the most space on the GOP bench right now, but it's certainly so early, another name or two or three could emerge again.
Is Cuomo's popularity going up?
Cuomo's popularity has rebounded from where it was, about a year and a half ago. And I think we're still waiting to see kind of how the most recent budget negotiation, in which he won a significant number of the agenda items, progressive agenda items that he was hoping for. He got the increase in the minimum wage, although Republicans were able to get a couple of concessions to slow it down.
Very slow, like molasses.
Especially upstate, where the wage is going to rise to $12.50 over the course of the next 4 years, 5 years, end of 2020. And then after that, the increase is up to $15. Would have to be set and approved by the budget division, and the budget division, of course, is controlled by the governor. So whoever is governor in 4 or 5 years down the road is going to have the whip hand in making that choice, which if you're running for governor in 2018 is something that you're probably going to mention.
Let's talk about the Senate, the Republican Senate. Now, to me, this is a no-brainer. The Republicans get to largely draw their own districts in the Senate. We know this. We know that Cuomo, who said he was going to oppose that, didn't when he was elected the first time. We have other evidence that Cuomo wants the Republicans to control the Senate.
What is your evidence?
Well, one of them is that he allowed them to continue to draw their own district. So that's...
Well, but he also let Assembly Democrats draw
their
own districts.
Yeah, but there are so many of those guys, of the Assembly Democrats. And New York is a blue state, Casey. So there really was no question that he could have a fair fight in the Assembly. The Democrats would win. In the Senate, he really has loaded the bases. Now, there's a famous case because, as you know, my hero, Preet Bharara, went ahead and indicted and won a conviction of Dean Skelos, the majority leader, and his district is up for grabs right now. And the Democrats have put up this guy Kaminsky, who, by the way, I just learned has a tremendous pedigree in that he is the grandnephew of Mel Brooks.
I know.
The 2,000-year-old man.
Yes, exactly. who just did a robocall for him.
Right.
And it's enough to make you wish you lived on Long Island.
Absolutely.
That you would pick up the phone and hear even a recorded voice say, "Hi, it's Mel Brooks," in that distinct voice.
This is the 2,000-year-old man. I just want you to know that Kaminsky came around when all my other children, not even a postcard, "How are you, Pop?" So Casey Seiler, what happens to the Senate? Has Cuomo, who said he has endorsed Kaminsky, has he done anything really to help him?
No, he's been kind of hanging back on that. Of course, we're speaking about a little bit less than a week before the primary goes off. And the primary, of course, will be the same day as the presidential primary that we're talking about.
That means a lot of Democrats will be coming out.
It also means a lot of Republicans will be coming out as well. So I think you would have to say it's going to be something of a wash in the sense that there is excitement on both sides of the aisle. So I don't know if what everybody was saying earlier was if Hillary Clinton had an overwhelming lead in the Democratic battle, that would tend to depress the votes out on Long Island that Kaminsky really, really needed. Kaminsky is probably ecstatic that Bernie Sanders is still in the race and adding excitement to that contest because it's probably going to turn out Democratic voters who will likely cast their votes for him.
And Democrats are less likely to come out and vote than Republicans are. I've always considered the people who have the most money to protect the franchise. You know, they have Republicans don't have nearly the same number in New York State as Democrats do.
I would say that the idea that Republicans are predominantly moneyed and Democrats are predominantly, you know, lower class, lower income is belied by the fact that the Times Union Center on Monday night for Donald Trump was filled with people who, you know, it was a mix. But I think you saw a lot of people who were working class, without a doubt. I did not attend the Bernie Sanders rally at the Washington Avenue Armory on Monday. I went to John Kasich, who appeared out at LaSalle Institute.
Why would you do that?
In North Greenbush. Why would I do what?
Why would you go to John Kasich when you had either Bernie or the other guy? Kasich has really shown us nothing.
Well, because believe it or not, I had outstanding folks, Times Union reporters and photographers who were covering Sanders.
I see.
And somebody needed to cover Kasich. So I covered his Q&A at the Capitol where he went to go meet with lawmakers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I went out to LaSalle. And that was the most prosperous-looking, suburban. It's in North Greenbush, which is a suburb here in the Capital Region. Mm-hmm. It was the most prosperous-looking crowd of any of the rallies that I've attended or that our folks have covered.
Now, I'm told...
Kasich was very good, by the way.
Yeah. But I'm told that the Republicans in the New York State Senate couldn't wait to get over to, you know, shake hands with Kasich or to be... Kasich fans, because they know he's the kind of moderate, perceived as the kind of moderate who might save their hashes.
And Kasich said that straight up in the Q&A that he did with reporters. He was asked, you know, why don't you get out? There are lots of people who are saying that you should get out, which would allow the party to unify either behind Trump or behind Cruz. And what he said was the party could unify behind somebody who could lead it into disaster in the fall. And he said it straight up. I'm paraphrasing, but what he said was if the Senate majority wants to stay the majority, they need to be running on a ticket.
With me.
With me. Yeah.
So we only have 4 minutes, Casey, which annoys me. I want to know, one, will the New York State Senate go Democratic?
I would say even if Kaminsky wins, correct. Yeah, Todd Kaminsky, sitting assemblyman. Even if he wins, I would say it is unlikely that anything will happen before the November elections, barring some kind of incredible issue or something else raising up. Because you have to remember that the Independent Democratic Conference, the five-member breakaway Democratic mini-conference headed by Senator Jeff Klein, is still allied with the GOP and is likely, I would say, to stay that way, especially because they're able to point to this just-passed budget deal that included, you know, Cuomo's agenda, employee paid family leave and the minimum wage increase.
Now, Casey Seiler, the next question is, whatever happened to the idea that the governor and others would put ethics reform in the New York State budget, which they did not do?
That certainly fell by the wayside. That was something that the governor insisted upon last year. He did not insist on it this year. The governor has said, when asked what his primary agenda items are going to be for the rest of the session, ethics is the thing that he mentions first. Activist good government groups were appalled at the fact that the governor made virtually no push after mentioning for about 5 or 6 minutes ethics in his State of the State executive budget presentation back in early January. Since then, you know, Blair Horner's term was cricket sounds to describe what the governor has done on ethics. He didn't speak about ethics unless prompted by questions from reporters for 2.5 months. And now he has started the discussion about ethics again. Now, the question is always going to be, when you say ethics reforms, what do you mean? You know, sure. The devil's in the details. I think it's probably a lock that you're going to see the initial passage, the first of two that are required for a constitutional amendment that will bar all lawmakers, as opposed to just kind of the most recently elected officials, receiving a public pension if they are found guilty of abusing their office, of public corruption. That's something that Cuomo demanded last year as part of an ultimatum that he put after the arrest of Sheldon Silver, the assembly speaker. And then after that, it was supposed to be kind of settled. And then the assembly balked because they were afraid that the constitutional amendment would be too broad. And then the whole thing just broke down. It was a classic Albany two-step where the Senate says, we acted, and the assembly said, well, we acted. But of course, if they don't act in Congress on the same bill, meaning, you know, act on the same legislation, nothing gets done. And that's where things have stood for the last year.
So very quickly, because we have no time left, can we expect any substantive legislation on ethics that will make a difference?
I think that depends on your definition of substantive. I would not miss meals waiting for the sort of comprehensive, sweeping ethics reform that includes, for example, closure of the LLC, the so-called LLC loophole that you and I have discussed endlessly, income, outside income limits for lawmakers. I think those are things that we're going to be watching closely, but I would say cynicism is a good insurance policy against disappointment in the state legislature.
Well, Casey Seiler, it's my middle name. And speaking of which, we're out of time. Our guest has been Casey Seiler, who really does know his stuff, state editor and Capitol Bureau chief for Albany Times Union, also one of the hosts of Public Television's New York Now, a statewide political program. Casey, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.